A recent column in the Boston Herald has ignited a controversy over the business model of the Boston Phoenix, an alternative weekly paper that enjoyed a nearly 50-year run before shutting down in 2013. The Phoenix had a reputation for great journalism. It was on the clergy sex abuse story very early, and it gave serious and sustained coverage to the AIDS crisis. But the paper was also known for its notorious back page ads, which offered things like, quote, ultimate massage or oriental-style body rub and escort services, with provocative pictures and descriptions like nice young girl from Hong Kong. The Phoenix's archive is now held by Northeastern University. And the question raised by the Herald is, how should the university and the community think about the Phoenix's legacy, and how much of that legacy is the paper's back pages? Joining me now is John Carroll, WBUR senior news analyst and blogger at It's Good to Live in a Two Daily Town. John, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good to be here.
So part of the conflict here is over the fact that the university's library online describes these old classified back page ads as, quote, ads for roommates, romantic mates, and bandmates, without explicitly addressing the really sort of obvious suggestive nature of what those ads were really about, John. And I think that's where a lot of the anger in the recent days lies. So what do you make of that?
Yeah, sorry. This conversation is happening basically on two extremes. You've got the Boston Herald. And this sort of controversy is mother's milk to the Herald. And so they're pounding the drum. They've got people saying, you know, Northeastern should divest itself of the entire archive. And you've got Northeastern sort of giving the soft soap treatment. And I think that, you know, the rational conversation occurs somewhere in the middle between those two.
I'll just mention that I am a Northeastern alum. I feel like I should just get that disclosure out there. I'll also point out that Northeastern Libraries Dean Dan Cohen has issued a statement saying, quote, libraries and archives retain the past so that we can strive to learn from and not repeat our mistakes. This often means preserving materials that are troubling and offensive. It is only through honest studying and understanding of the past, including our best and worst selves, that societies can ensure human progress, end quote. So, John Carroll, I mean, that seems to me, though, is kind of a pivot, because we haven't seen that type of concession, that kind of context on the Northeastern website that sort of promotes the Phoenix until this point.
Right. And archives are supposed to record and reflect history. And I think that when you leave out that part, that the revenue model for the Boston Phoenix was very much fueled by these kinds of ads, both in the print edition and in the online edition. I think when you leave that out, you leave out significant context. And just to be clear, it wasn't just the Phoenix that did this. There were a lot of alternative weeklies, alternative publications that did the same thing. The Village Voice had Backpage.com, a much more notorious website in terms of sex trafficking. This was not unusual, which is not to say that it was, laudable.
And there were other types of ads, too, we'll point out. I mean, there were some personal ads.
There were band ads kind of thing. Yeah, but to limit it to that, I think, is really misleading the public.
Well, so I think to this question about whether just putting the archive in context will be enough, you know, we talked earlier today with Nikki Bell, who's the founder and director of Living in Freedom Together, or LIFT, which is a group that supports survivors of the commercial sex trade and trafficking in Worcester. And she said no matter how you frame the archive here, if you're in possession of those old papers with those ads, you just need to call a spade a spade.
I think what happens is people just want to gloss over like the violence and prostitution and not really discuss it and kind of like excuse their participation in it. I don't think it's that people, like when this was taking place, were saying prostitution's okay or prostitution isn't violence. I mean, people have been saying that, you know, this is an inherently violent industry for a long time.
So what about Nikki's point there, John? I mean, it's easy to understand how it can feel unsatisfactory to just say, well, here's a digital plaque that sort of puts in context this really awful thing.
True. And you look back in as recently as 2010, the editor of the Phoenix told the Boston Globe that any solicitations were victimless crimes and that basically they have a First Amendment right to publish these escort ads. And if there's a prostitution problem online, that's for the police to deal with, not for the Phoenix to deal with. So I think that was a particularly tinny response there. But you're also looking at a very different time. I mean, to look at that publication through a Me Too lens is, in a way, that distorts history, too. It was a different time. There was a lot of criticism back then for the Phoenix. There always was. The Herald, routinely called Stephen Mindich a pornographer for decades. So it wasn't that there was no criticism, but the sensibility we have now is not the same sensibility even 9 years ago.
Right. And the Mindich family is responding to all this, I'll point out. So we talked with Brad Mindich earlier. His father, Stephen, who you mentioned, John, ran the Boston Phoenix before it closed. And we asked Brad Mindich what he makes about those ads that use some language that seems pretty clear about what's really behind them. And this is some of what he told us.
What is the expectation that you think a media outlet, whether it's the Phoenix or the Globe or the Herald or Channel 5 or whatever, should have with regard to particular content? If somebody places an ad that is absolutely legal to place, that there should be some sort of censorship inside the media outlets to say, well, this could be this. It's a very dangerous territory.
So you're sort of making a legalistic argument there, John. But, I mean, news outlets do turn down ads that offend their sensibilities with some regularity.
They absolutely do. And we should be clear, this is not a First Amendment issue. This is not the government. This is a news publication that is making these decisions as they go along. I think one of the issues here is this is clouding over what is a really strong legacy of journalism in the Phoenix. I mean, the Boston Phoenix was a farm team for some really big league writers. Susan Orlean, Janet Maslin, Joe Klein, Mark Leibovich. They did coverage that the establishment press did not do. In politics, in media, they had a music critic who won a Pulitzer Prize in 1994, Lloyd Schwartz. So this was a legitimate journalistic organization. And this part of it, this revenue model, is something that is they are fully responsible for. There's no question about it. But it's something that's in part separate from the journalistic work that they did. So I think the rational discussion here is to separate the two and hold the Phoenix responsible for what it did in both areas. And I think from a journalistic area, having an archive is a good thing for Boston and for anyone who's interested in the history of journalism in Boston.
But how do we weigh the two? I mean, I guess even if we can separate the two and hold, one in each hand, how do they stack up?
Well, everybody's going to make their own individual judgment about that.
Yeah.
I think that, where you stand on this is going to determine your overall opinion of the Boston Phoenix. But I think that it's not really legitimate to use one to delegitimize the other. So I think this revenue model was shared by a lot of alternative weeklies. I think that they should be held responsible and accountable for it. But I don't think that dismissing the entire body of work that appeared in the Phoenix is the appropriate response.
I do want to be sort of precise about the substance of what we're talking about here. I mean, some of these adult ads that are now circulating again on social media. One, for example, was for the North Main Street Spa in Providence. You do a Google search on them, you'll find the Providence Journal has reported in 2015 that it was a front for prostitution and been shut down by police. There was another one near the Mohegan Sun Casino. The local news site Patch reported that the owner of that spa had been stripped of her license and convicted in New York of promoting prostitution. So it is a concrete thing here, too, right? It's
absolutely
not just sort of a theoretical, we think maybe something shady was going on.
No, absolutely. And I'm not condoning what they did. I think that we have a different sensibility right now. And the important thing, newspapers and news organizations make mistakes. The important thing, I think, is to go back and hold yourself accountable for them. In this case, it's going to be Northeastern that has to hold itself accountable because the Phoenix isn't around. But I think that sense of going out and making a public admission that this was a mistake and, this was something that was not an admirable or even a respectable thing to do. That's Northeastern's responsibility now. And I think that they, when they picked up the Phoenix Archive, they picked up that responsibility as well.
Yeah. So what do they do now, John? I mean, in the moments we have left, we're in this moment of reckoning, I think, in a lot of places, universities, or whether it's monuments, or we're looking back and we're reevaluating the past in a lot of different public spheres.
I think they have to address this in a more complete way than they already have. I think somewhere in between what the Herald is calling for and what Northeastern has offered is the place to go to have something that is more substantial in terms of acknowledging the situation.
WBUR senior news analyst John Carroll. He's also the blogger at It's Good to Live in a Two Daily Town. Thanks for coming in, John.
Thank you.